Okay, I've got basically three questions that have come in, although they're fairly substantial questions. Three questions that have come in. There was a few that sort of the same question came in a couple of different ways, so I'm sort of answering them together. But the first one's to do with Jesus' body now. The question is that Jesus was raised physically, but then he disappeared. I think one of them said he sort of, you know, in the sky when he ascended, he sort of disappeared. Is he no longer physical? What happened to the atoms that made up his body? If he was the first fruits of the harvest, will we follow a similar path, or will we remain physical in the new earth? Well, yes, he was raised physically. The empty tomb, we've seen in 1 Corinthians 15, the empty tomb is a clear implication that his body was not in there. He was raised physically. And as I said, the language of resurrection, raised from the dead, means that. Disappeared. Talking about him disappearing. He sort of was raised and then he disappeared at the ascension. Well, yes and no, I would say, with disappearing. It's an interesting thing. We heard from Luke's gospel, one of the sort of accounts of the ascension, that he'd left them and then was taken up into heaven. Not quite the same language as disappearing. And also in Acts chapter 1, so the other sort of account of it, which is by the same author, Luke, probably a slightly fuller account, it says, as they were watching, as the apostles were watching, he was lifted up and a cloud took him out of their sight. Again, not quite the idea of disappearing. It's a little bit mysterious what happened, but it's not quite the language of sort of he sort of vanished into thin air or something. Before that, though, in the time between him rising from the dead in the first Easter and when he went back, when he ascended into heaven, there does seem to be a sort of a disappearing and reappearing at times of Jesus. He goes on the road to Emmaus with the two disciples and they didn't recognize him. And then when they did recognize him, he does sort of seem to disappear. But we don't know exactly what that means. Did it mean he went into some other dimension of some kind? I don't know. Does it mean that he just went to somewhere else? Because he was with them and then he very soon after it seems he appeared to Peter. He just was able to sort of jump space over to them. I don't know. And as we saw last time, his resurrected body does seem to have been not as limited as our bodies are. And yet, he was still plainly physical, wasn't he? He went out of his way in that Luke reading we had, that the apostles have remembered, went out of his way to show that he was physical. I mean, he would be being rather deceptive if he was saying, look, I've got flesh and bones and I'm eating, but actually I'm not physical. So he's clearly trying to show that he was physical. So I take it wherever he is, and where he is now, is at the right hand of the Father, wherever that is, in some sense in heaven, exactly where that is, I don't know. But wherever he is, he has a human body still. He's got a raised, transformed body, but a real one. And we will follow the same path in the new creation. A more solid, more real body, clothed in immortality and imperishability. Beyond that, there's a lot of mystery, but I think those things are clear. I hope that's helpful. Please, by the way, if I haven't answered well, come see me afterwards. And I'll try with anything else I can. The next one, verse 25, and reigning in the future timeline. So someone's asked a question about specifically about verse 25 in 1 Corinthians 15. It's great. And the questioner sort of had a bit of trouble trying to figure out or understand what's meant or implied by verse 25 when it talks about Christ reigning. And I'll read that verse because it'll help us. Verse 25, for he must reign until he has put all his enemies under his feet. And the question's around the timeline. So the questioner says, the order seems to be Christ comes back, his enemies are defeated, and then the last enemy is defeated, i.e. death, when we're resurrected. And says, is that right? If so, what does reigning mean? It would make sense to start reigning when the sinful authorities are defeated, when the work's done, and not sort of up until the last enemy is defeated. It seems to be backwards. Well, let me say, as I answer this question, I recognize I get into a more controversial area because there are different ideas about how things will unfold at the end of time when Jesus returns and around that, and different ideas that put together different parts of the Bible in different ways. For me, I'll say this passage in 1 Corinthians 15 has a particular clarity that I think many of the others that people weigh a lot of weight on don't have as much clarity. I think this one's particularly clear. It doesn't answer all our questions, but it's very clear. Relatively straightforward, more so than some of the apocalyptic imagery that people often lean on. So this one, for me, gives the clearest picture. It fits well with 1 Thessalonians 4, which is also quite clear. We saw that last year. But I realize there are different views, and I'm just going to give you what I think from here. If you think differently, that's okay. First of all, the order thing. It's slightly different to what the questioner thinks, I think. So verse 23 to 24 give a chronology that Christ is raised and then he comes. And at those time, at that time, those who belong to him are raised. And then the end, when all opposing authority is destroyed. So Christ comes. Christ is raised. Sorry, Christ was raised. So that's Christ was raised. And then he'll come again. And then at that time, those who belong to him are raised. And then the end, when all the opposing authority is destroyed. Verse 25 then seems to go back into the present. If we read verse 25 and 26 together, it's talking about this is why all the authorities, etc., need to be destroyed. And the last one to be destroyed will be death. So I take it the reign of Jesus has already begun. And it certainly fits with in Acts chapter 2 and other places where it talks about, you know, you killed this one, he's been raised from the dead, and he is Lord and Messiah. What does a Lord do? A Lord reigns. So he is reigning. He's been raised, in fact, as Lord and Messiah, the apostles will say. So I think he is reigning now, and he's reigning in a sense, a bit like you imagine a king takes control of a country that's a bit unruly, and the king is reigning, but there are parts of it still to bring under control. That's the kind of idea. It's not quite right, but it's that sort of idea. And it'll be completed when every opposing dominion, every opposing power has been defeated, and the last of those will be death. And I think that fits with that passage. So that's what I think is happening there. So I think he's reigning now, and I think that reign continues. And in a sense, of course, Jesus will reign forever, but there's a sense, as we saw in there, that he hands his reign over to his Father as well. You kind of get both those pictures in the Bible. Okay, so if that doesn't make sense, chat to me afterwards, that's fine. Last one of these ones, living the resurrection now. There was a question noted from Romans 11 to 13, a sort of passage, a little bit like this one, a bit different, that talks about the resurrection, and particularly about what the resurrection means for us. The writer gave me Romans 8, quoted to me in the King James Bible. I've got the King James Version, I've got the NIV in front of me, so I'll just read. Will I do this quickly? Yes, I'll quickly do this. I'll read each verse. The two translations, by the way, basically have exactly the same, well, they nearly always have exactly the same meaning, but they certainly do here. I checked it. Verse 11 of Romans chapter 8 says, "And if the spirit of him who raised Jesus from the dead is living in you, he who raised Christ from the dead will also give life to your mortal bodies because of his spirit who lives in you." Now that's the idea that we've seen this in the last couple of weeks, the idea that we have the spirit who's like a down payment. We have the first fruits of the spirit now, and the spirit is the one who has the power that raised Jesus from the dead. In other words, what we saw last week, the spirit animated Jesus' new body in the way that he will animate ours. It will be a spiritual body in that sense, a spirit-empowered body. We already have the first fruits of the Spirit in us now if we believe in Jesus. Therefore, we can be confident we'll be raised in the end. That's what he's saying. If we've got the Spirit now, then the Spirit, that same Spirit who raised Jesus from the dead, will raise our mortal bodies. Right? We'll give life to our mortal bodies. Verse 12 to 13 then goes on with sort of what that means for us, which is, "Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation, but it's not to the flesh to live according to it. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die. But if by the Spirit you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live." This is sort of the other side. If we've got the Spirit in us, and in the end we'll be raised Spirit-powered like Jesus, then we ought to start living like it now, sort of anticipating it. If we live apart from the Spirit, we'll die, because we don't have the resurrecting Spirit, if the Spirit's not in us. But if we live according to the Spirit, we'll live. Now, by the way, just to be clear, and I'm being brief, well, I know I'm not, but I'm being briefer than I would otherwise be. I don't think this means that every time we sin, we're in danger of dying exactly, like, you know, everything's going out the window straight away, because of what Paul says basically everywhere else, but that's not the case. But what it's saying is we have a choice how we live now. And if we do keep following the ways of the flesh, if we keep going down after sin and chasing sin, it could eventually lead us away from Christ and therefore away from salvation. So don't muck around with it, he's saying. Live who you are, your reality in Christ. And the question, the specific nub of the question was asking is, what practical steps can we take for that? 8 verse 13. I just thought it was important to understand the context of it. Well, at one level, what practical steps can we take to put to death the misdeeds of the body? It's not rocket science. Do what it says. Put them to death. Put to death the deeds of the flesh. We saw a list of those, for instance, a couple of weeks ago in Galatians 5. We called them acts of the flesh. There's lots of them. Basically, don't coddle them. If lust is causing you to sin, talk to someone about it. Get accountability software on your computer if that's helpful. It helps me. Talk to someone about it. Or if it's certain books that you're reading that are leading you down the line of lust, talk to someone about it so you're not on your own dealing with it. And decide, I'm not going to get those books out of the library. I'm not going to buy them. Put it to death. Deal with it. Get rid of it. If it's drunkenness, set a limit for yourself well below the drunkenness level. It might be, well, I'm only going to have one drink on any night, or I might not drink at all because I know if I drink, I'm going to end up getting drunk. I can't stop myself. Put it to death. It's not worth mucking around with. If it's greed, then actively decide to give more away to the poor in order to train yourself not to be greedy and to exercise in yourself the joy of giving. Put it to death. Take action. So actively take steps to live the resurrection life. And remember, you have the Spirit who raised Jesus from the dead, who will ultimately power your resurrection of Christ in you, helping you to do these things. So you can take a step. You can do it. And you've also got other Christians that God has given you. So for goodness sake, don't try and do it on your own. We're going to be raised in community. We're supposed to live in community. Don't try and wrestle with your sin all on your own. It's arrogant. Don't do it. Talk to someone about it. I know we're very, I don't want to. No, we're Christians. We know we're sinners. So talk to someone about it. Get some help. So there's some practical steps. I think I could take one or two from the floor if there's any. Yeah, maybe just one or two if there's any.